Welcome to Decoding the Customer, a podcast about customer experience and how to realize customer-centric change in today's dynamic business world. I'm Julia Allfelt, certified customer experience professional, business advisor, and your host as we explore topics, trends, and best practices that are enabling brands to thrive in the age of the customer. Thank you for tuning in. If this is your first time listening, welcome. If you're a regular listener, thanks, and it's great to have you back. This is episode 38, the first of four weekly episodes during the month of May. This month, I'm going to be exploring what it means to deliver customer experiences to different customer segments. Most customer experience professionals have a pretty solid grasp on the building blocks of good customer experience. But that's just the beginning. Customers are not one big homogeneous group. They're diverse. And to foster lasting loyalty, brands need to go the extra mile to understand the nuances of their customers' wants and needs so that they can deliver experiences that are compelling. This is how we move the dial from a good experience that checks the boxes to a great experience that turns customers into brand advocates. During the month of May, I'm going to be exploring how organizations can better understand their customers. In my mini masterclasses later this month, I'll be covering things like how to build a customer persona, and I'll be evaluating the approaches for different ways that you can do customer listening and research. But to start, I wanted to share an example of what customer experience can look like when an organization deeply understands the wants and needs of its customers. I recently had the pleasure of interviewing Troy Smith, who's the owner and managing director of True Africa, a company that offers customized upmarket African safaris. During our conversation, Troy talks about how the safari industry has responded to digital disruption. He explains how his company differentiates itself from the rest of the pack. He shares their approach for understanding customers and also what it means to deliver a five-star experience in the remote African bush. His approaches need not be isolated to the travel industry or even within luxury segments. If you're looking for inspiration about how to listen to the needs of customers and deliver truly compelling customer experiences, stay tuned. If this episode inspires you to learn more about how organizations can improve customer insight and understanding, I'd encourage you to check out CX University. CX University has long been a supporter of the customer experience profession, and I'm proud to have them as a sponsor of this episode. CX University offers a broad array of online courses, CCXP practice tests, webinars, instructor-led training, e-learning, and custom modules. CX University is a CXPA authorized resource and training provider, meaning that their materials have been reviewed and vetted by the Customer Experience Professional Association for alignment to the six core competencies that are in the CCXP exam. And CX University also provides the option to earn six U.S. college credits through their courses. They have a flexible and affordable monthly subscription model and have offered an exclusive discount to listeners of this show. Listeners of this podcast can use the code PODCAST10 to get 10% off the first month subscription. So thank you to CX University for your support. And with that, let's dive into today's show. If you've ever been on safari in Africa, you know that it's an incredibly unique experience. There's nothing else quite like it. If you haven't, then imagine yourself watching the Discovery Channel and then being transported into the middle of that world. Nothing is so humbling or awe-inspiring as watching the sunset over the plains of the Serengeti, or holding your breath as a family of elephants cruises by your open-air safari truck, or waking up to the pre-dawn sounds of a lion roaring. These experiences are due in large part to the majesty of the animal kingdom and the natural beauty of the African continent. But the magic of safari is also thanks to the teams behind the scenes that help visitors have a seamless, customized, and memorable experience. Troy Smith is the owner and managing director of True Africa, a company that specializes in tailored African safari itineraries to suit guests in the upper mid-range to luxury segments. Troy and his team work with a network of safari camps, lodges, guides, and ground teams to build the perfect trip for each customer. I think that technically True Africa could be classified as a travel agency, but for reasons that will become clear in a few minutes, I don't think that classification does his team enough justice. Their offering goes far beyond the traditional role of the travel agent. And this is due in large part to Troy's extensive experience in the safari industry. Originally from Australia and having previously worked in luxury safari camps in both Kenya and South Africa, Troy took over the reins at True Africa 7 years ago. He's based in their Cape Town office, but has vast experience across the continent. Everything from a close encounter with a hippo while on a Maroku in the Okavango Delta, to exhilarating walking safaris in Zambia and watching the herd zigzag across the Serengeti's plains, Troy understands safaris incredibly well and leads his team and their efforts of matching clients with the right destination for their safari experiences. With a strong background in marketing and business development, Troy has combined his passion for travel in East and Southern Africa and built a burgeoning business in the luxury safari sector. I found his insights to be fascinating and largely applicable to other sectors and segments as well, and I hope that you do too. A summary of the insights from my conversation with Troy, as well as more details about Troy and his business, are available in the show notes for this episode, which are on my website, julia-allfelt.com or decodingthecustomer.com. Well, Troy, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
No problems at all. Happy to be here.
So when many of us think about the travel industry, we think about an industry that has moved largely online and towards self-service. The role of the travel agent has definitely changed. What's unique about True Africa's value add, and what has enabled you to remain successful?
That's a very good question. That's something we get asked a lot by our customers. Why should we work with you as opposed to just doing it online ourselves? I would suggest that our value add is that we are really specialists and we're experts. We know what we're talking about. You could jump on booking.com and Expedia, which is populated by the various properties across Africa. And they all, of course, say they're the best property. They have the best wildlife viewing. They have the most beautiful views. Whereas we've been to these properties, we've seen them ourselves. We compare them. A lot of the time when you're looking at something online, they're putting their best foot forward. Whereas we're able to actually assess each property and each region. When it comes to something such as a safari, you have to look at, is this the best region to be in? There's so many technicalities. You know, we talk about going on safari in the Serengeti. Well, the Serengeti is huge. There's like 150 properties. So they all say they're the best. When you look online, they present themselves really well. You have a fantastic photographer and they say, we offer the best safari experience, but we'll actually really drill down and say, this one is better than that one for these three reasons, or this one may be more suitable for you because you like this, this, and this, and they can actually meet those needs. So it's firsthand experience being to these places, really being able to discuss them in detail rather than just having a marketed view online that the properties are presenting rather than an independent third-party review of them.
Hmm. And do you find there are a lot of differences between these properties, even though they present themselves as very similar? When you go there, they're quite different?
Yeah, most definitely. We talk about the specific properties, but then we also talk about like the property groups, for example. It's quite a buzzword and it's very important in the industry to talk about conservation and corporate social impact. Some of them talk the talk and others walk the walk. And so if that's something that's important to a client, we can say, well, these guys just market it very well and they have a great website that talks about all of their positive impact, but they don't actually really deliver it on the ground. And we can give them tangible examples of what they've done in the past year, how much they've spent, and talk about what they've actually done rather than what they've told us they've done. So it's sort of having an independent third party who is an expert in the different properties, regions, and the logistics of putting together what can be quite a complicated trip.
That's interesting because in the age of the customer that we live in now, one of the things that's enabled customers to become so empowered is that information has become ubiquitous. So it's everywhere. And so when you have really highly informed consumers, they can make really smart decisions about when and where to spend their money. But what I'm hearing you say is that in this sector in particular, that actually information isn't ubiquitous, that there's a lot of information that's out there, but it's not consistent or it's not truthful. And so in some ways, it sounds like what you do is cutting through that noise and translating what's out there as marketing spin into this is what a real experience could be.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, there's a lot of misinformation out there. Most of our clients are from overseas, and the specific geography of Tanzania or of Kenya they've either spent hours and hours researching, or it's probably not familiar for them. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a trade-off of working with somebody who can do it quite quickly and advise them with the specifics and the specifics that work really well for them very quickly versus spending a lot of time researching. And if they tried to do it themselves, quite honestly, half the time they'll stuff it up and make a bit of a mistake and book the flight into the wrong airstrip. And suddenly you're 3 hours from the camp you're supposed to be at because it wasn't quite clear which airstrip they should be landing into.
Okay.
So there's a lot of like small nuances that you really do need to get right, especially around the logistics and getting the absolute best property or the best safari and the best combination of properties for your trip. So that's, I guess, where we come in.
So do you think there will always be a role for travel agents in this way, or are things changing? Is the information becoming better? If it does become better, what does that mean for travel agents?
It's a really good question, and it is something that we do deal with. I would suggest that perhaps the more low-end segment, which is sort of the more mass market, that is certainly moving more online with people self-servicing. We work in quite a high-end sector, so sort of luxury travel. And generally, if you think about the consumer, they want the best. They have a certain standard that they're looking for. They don't want to spend hours and hours researching. They just want to go to somebody that knows exactly what they're talking about, can put together an incredible trip, and that it'll be seamless. They don't want to worry about their vacation while they're on vacation. Mm-hmm. I think the high-end market will remain. That definitely has a place.
When you're talking about luxury consumers, those that are consuming at the very high end, for those people, oftentimes time is a really scarce commodity.
Interestingly enough, it's time during the research phase, but also while on vacation. You know, a lot of our clients coming from the States have limited vacation days, or they may be a CEO or director of a company and they can't be away for too long. Logistics in and around Africa can be complex, and they often want to minimize the amount of dead time. You know, they want to maximize their vacation on the ground. And we know sort of tips and tricks to ensure they're not sitting in an airport waiting for a flight for 5 hours, or avoiding a dead night on arrival or something like that, really maximizing their time on the ground. They can save time in the process of booking and researching the trip, but also maximize their time on the ground. So it's a win-win, really.
And I would suppose also being somebody who can help if something goes awry during the trip. I mean, we both live in Africa. We both have traveled extensively into Africa, and we know that sometimes things don't go according to plan, and sometimes they don't go according to plan in a place where you don't have cell phone reception. So what are you going to do, and how are you going to fix that?
Totally. And I mean, that's really when the advantage of working with a specialist comes into play. A couple of years ago, we had clients saying they were already halfway through their vacation, and I had to call them and say, look, sorry guys, the lodge you were supposed to fly to tomorrow has burned down. If they'd booked this online themselves, A, because they're out in the middle of nowhere without cell phone reception, there's no internet, they would just get on their plane the next day and they'd land at the airstrip and nobody would be there. They'd probably just see the smoke off in the distance and wonder what that is.
That's like worst nightmare material.
But it happens.
Yeah.
I mean, not regularly, thank goodness. So we have the camp manager and the owner of the camp's cell phone details, whatever we call them. We have the satellite phone details for the camp if they're in a really remote location. And we say, look, guys, unfortunately, your lodge or your hotel for tomorrow night has burned down. But don't worry, we've already made these changes and then these arrangements. And you'll be picked up tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. and you're going to go to this different location. And you know, it's sorted and you keep enjoying your vacation. If you'd done that yourself, you'd be really in quite a lot of trouble, literally in the middle of the Kenyan countryside with nowhere to go.
And a smoking lodge off in the distance. So your offering is aimed at high-end clientele who are looking for a special, maybe five-star, possibly once-in-a-lifetime travel experience. What does good look like for these customers in terms of the kinds of experiences that they're seeking?
It really is quite often a once-in-a-lifetime experience for a lot of these people coming. I mean, the world is a magnificent place. There are so many amazing destinations to travel to. And Africa is an expensive destination, and it's quite far from Europe and the States. You know, a lot of people do only come once in their lifetime. Many believe they'll come once in their lifetime, and they get bitten by what we call the African travel bug. Mm-hmm. And then they come back 2 years later and 2 years later and 2 years later. What we always do is try and tailor the experience to suit their preferences, their desires. You know, we actually had a client a few years ago who said, growing up in the States, she watched Out of Africa with Meryl Streep and Robert Redford. And since then, she dreamed of traveling to Africa. And it's what she had in her mind. And we literally put together this really amazing trip that was kind of in the footsteps of Karen Blixen. And then it was for her and her mom. And she had an amazing time. And we took them to places where the movie was shot. We took them to the real places where Karen Blixen had her farm, where the real Dennis Finch Hatton lived, you know, the people behind the story. And then we took them to the Hollywood version as well. That was an incredible trip for her.
Totally personalized.
Totally personalized. Other times we have clients who, you know, say, ever since I was a child, I've been in love with elephants. So we just want to do these incredible experiences with elephants. And we can take them right up into northern Kenya, where very few Westerners have ever been. And they're out there in the middle of nowhere, them, their guide, and 300 elephant. Like, there's pretty cool experiences out there. It's a matter of matching them to the client and knowing about them. These sorts of things you can't often find online.
Oh, no. I mean, it would be very difficult to piece something like that together on your own, if you could even do it without local on the ground information.
Yeah,
that would be really difficult.
That's one of the things, you know, I used to live in Kenya and my business partner used to live in Tanzania. So we know these regions really well. They're somewhat our second homes. So we know the distances to travel from here to there. We know the shortcuts. We know what's realistic and what's not realistic. Unfortunately, as you said,
everything looks smaller on a map.
Everything looks smaller on a map. And Google Maps is the bane of our existence.
Oh, no.
Everybody says, yeah, but it's only 2 hours to drive from here to here. And then you say, but you're not taking into account that it's a really bumpy, potholed gravel road. And there might be elephants that you have to stop and wait to cross the road and this. And the waiting time at the gate to get your permits could be an hour. So we break it down and we give them realistic, you know, this is what it's going to be. This is how we can make it work logistically, or just managing their expectations. You know, you might be waiting at a gate for Tanzanian National Parks administrators to process your permits, which could take an hour. And then, you know, to soften the blow, we organize some beers or some wine or something. So while they're sitting there waiting for an hour, they're having some drinks. Maybe we drop them and they go to a market, or they go to a little craft shop or a curio shop and pick up some things while the guide runs off and gets the permits and then comes back and collects them. Again, maximizing their time on the ground.
So it sounds to me like a little bit of what you're doing is expectation management. So helping people understand, right, you're not in New York City. Things don't happen at the snap of your fingers, but then also identifying those places along the customer journey when there are likely to be delays and massaging those moments in the customer journey to try and make them a little less painful and maybe distract the customer a little bit from the fact that they're waiting for a national parks official.
Yeah. Honestly, that's exactly right. It's all about massaging the expectations. I think if you come from like a developed world where things happen quickly and it's very efficient, you know, that's one of the beauties of traveling to Africa. You see that it's slow, and it's one of the, we have clients who travel twice a year to escape the busyness of their lives, and they want to come somewhere where it's really slow and they can slow down and relax and catch their breath. But it's all about managing expectations. And I think that's one of the most important things, again, and I don't mean to harp on the point, these things you can't find online. They'll never tell you that it takes an hour to get your permit, or that you might sit waiting for the gate to open because somebody is running late that day. That doesn't happen in the first world, really, but it does happen in Africa, especially in East Africa, you know, where we sort of specialize. Things operate at a slower pace.
Yeah.
So it's about managing expectations of those coming from the first world, adapting to a developing world.
What's unique about the wants and needs of customers in your target segment? How do those expectations differ from maybe a mass market consumer?
It's an interesting one. And I think it's even sometimes difficult to generalize and say to the high-end segment, because there's so many different niches within the high-end segment. We've got customers that have traveled with us 8 times and they want something new every single time. And it can sometimes become difficult because we have to, you know, one up the last trip to ensure that all of those trips are incredible. Whereas others, you know, it's the first time they've left the States as a 55, 60-year-old man or whatever it may be. They've never left the States, or they've never traveled anywhere as perhaps adventurous as Africa. And so sometimes you need to ease them into it. You can't go straight in with the super remote properties, as interesting as they may be. Sometimes you need to sort of ease them into it. But I think in terms of differentiating between the high-end demographic to the more mass market, you really need to make sure that the guides we use on the ground, that the experience that we deliver matches their expectation, matches what we've sold them on. And we've described the experience, so we need to make sure that it's actually delivered on the ground as well. They've spent a lot of money, and we have to respect that. They want to make sure that their trip is as amazing as we say it will be. It's a bit more valuable, if I can say that. You know, some people that have dropped $100,000 on a 10-day holiday, you can't, you know, turn a blind eye if something goes wrong. You need to make sure that you deliver. Whereas if you've spent $2,000 on a 10-day holiday, you might say, it's $2,000. If there's a little bump in the road, I can get over that. If there's a bump in the road and you've spent $100,000, it's a bit different.
That's interesting. So there's perhaps an expectation that support will be there when I need it and things are going to go smoothly, and what I've been promised is actually what I'm going to receive. But also what I'm hearing you say is that within the luxury consumer market, there are so many different niches, and it really just comes down to what are the unique needs of that consumer. And you could have a seasoned traveler or a new traveler, and both are looking for a luxury experience.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Even more so perhaps in the high-end segment, you need to tailor it to their specific needs. We have clients who say, I like to drink red wine, and then you turn up at this camp and they don't have any red wine. You'd probably be pretty disappointed. In fact, why did you ask what I like to drink, but then you don't give it to me? That's kind of a bit of an issue there. So we really try to tailor things, even down to, you know, what drinks do you like, to make sure that we give you the best possible experience for you and your family, or you and your partner.
Do you see that there's more of an expectation that consumers have, or are consumers expecting this type of individual tailoring of the experience at this level?
Yeah, I think to a degree. I think it's actually quite often a pleasant surprise. They go into it expecting a bit more of a generic planning process. And then when we really do tailor it and narrow down, I think they're quite pleasantly surprised. The safari industry is one of those where it's still quite old school. We can get on the phone and just quickly call the owner of this lodge and say, hey, we have Mr. and Mrs. Johnson coming in. They really love this. These are their specific interests. And he says, okay, cool, I'll note that down and we'll deliver that. And I think because we're talking about a smaller size of the market, that we can tailor. You can't sort of tailor itineraries if you're churning through 10,000 travelers a year. We can personalize and really tailor because we're dealing with a smaller volume. The bigger companies out there, the bigger tour operators and travel agents out there, they have like 10,000 bookings a year. How do they even know the clients' names versus what their preferred drink is?
Are there any examples of global luxury brands, travel or otherwise, that you and your team look to for inspiration?
It's interesting. There are competitors of ours that we look to and we say, wow, they're doing a really great job there. And, you know, we aspire to those aspects. Interestingly enough, one of the areas where we probably fall short is maybe we don't market ourselves well enough. But we're kind of okay with that, actually, because we have a really strong following. We have a really good network of former clients, and they refer their friends and their colleagues and their family. So it's very organic, the growth, which we're quite happy about. It also means we don't have to spend endlessly on marketing, which is a really good thing. But then in terms of, you know, experiences, there are some fantastic property groups all around the world that we look to and we say, wow, they do really interesting, really unique experiences. Let's perhaps try and replicate some of those for our clients' trips in Africa. We have to almost translate it to what's practical on the ground in Africa. And, you know, we have to make sure it can actually be delivered. Again, it's about managing expectations.
So those experiences that you are looking to, those property groups overseas that you're saying, right, they're delivering a really cool and unique experience. What about those experiences appeals to you and inspires you?
We talk a lot about memories, and travel is one experience, and, you know, it might be 10 days in July, but that 10-day period in July actually continues so much longer than just those 10 days. You look back through photos. So we've thought about, you know, should we be doing certain things with photos and re-evoking imagery, smells, tastes? You know, one of these things that we're looking to do is to roll out a memory kit, which is whereby, you know, one of the iconic experiences that people have on their safari is so often sundowners, you know, quite often gin and tonics at sunset. What we're actually looking to do with a number of our really loyal clientele is to send them a year later just a small little gin sundowner kit where there's a little bottle of gin, some preserved or dried lemons, and a little can of soda water. It says using taste and smell to take you back into that moment when you were on your vacation last July. Food is one of those things that we often also think, I ate that while I was on safari. So then we're thinking about taking the menus of some of the dishes that you ate on safari and just mailing you the menu or the recipe so you can make it at home. So trying to pull you back into that experience. So even though it was a year ago or 2 years ago, you can relive it. There's some companies in India. There's a company called Sujan, and they're doing really impressive things. So I really look to them and think they're doing incredible experiences. They're with Tiger Safaris in Rajasthan. So they're somebody that I definitely look to. Really impressive stuff.
So it's one thing to deliver a five-star experience if you're in London or New York or Sydney or any other major global city where you have access to the best of the best and reliable electricity and water. But delivering a luxury experience in the middle of the African bush is a totally different kettle of fish. What are the practicalities of delivering experiences in such places? I mean, you've spoken a little bit already about matching expectations with the actual experience, but how do you deliver what you've promised in these really remote places?
It's actually one of the aspects that I really enjoy about our work is problem solving. We're not executing what I call conveyor belt safaris or conveyor belt travel. We're really tailoring all of the trips to suit each client. We had clients a few years ago who were strictly kosher. Now in New York, no issues whatsoever. You can, you know, organize kosher food. If you're in the middle of Tanzania, it's a big problem. You know, there is no kosher food in that entire country. It doesn't exist. So we ended up having to find suppliers in South Africa, fly them food up in advance in packages, and it's then shipped out. You know, people don't just travel to one destination on a safari. They might be going to three different locations in 10 days. So then we had to, you know, coordinate the menus for this couple and make sure the food had been delivered to each location before they traveled. And that food had come from South Africa.
Wow.
So that's just like an interesting anecdote that we really do tailor. These clients simply wouldn't have traveled if we couldn't guarantee them kosher food. It wasn't even a preference. It was a requirement.
Might be the kind of thing that prohibits somebody from being able to go see the magnificent beauty of the Serengeti or, you know, I mean, that would be really sad.
Totally. You've got to be clever and think outside the box and know who to call and make it happen.
So it sounds like it's really important for you to collaborate with your suppliers, whether those are tour operators on the ground or the property companies or the camps. How do you ensure that they deliver the experience that your customers have been promised? You sell the dream, and then how do you make sure that the camps are actually delivering that?
It comes down to relationship management. We work with properties and partners on the ground who we trust, who we've built relationships over the last 15, 16 years. We work with them. They know us. We know them. Stay in constant communication. We are incredibly thorough before the clients travel. So the client file is usually very thick and any and all information is passed on to the properties. And, you know, constantly managing the relationship. You know, I'm not going to lie, there are times when they might drop a ball. And we've said this client is vegetarian and they accidentally put a meat dish down in front of them. And we say, well, come on, guys, that was at lunch. Now, what are you going to do at dinner? If the client just SMS'd me and said, did you tell them I'm a vegetarian? And we say, of course we did. And we go back and we check and we told them three times. Then we call the camp owner or the camp manager and say, guys, you made a mistake at lunchtime. I want it fixed by dinner. And that happens. You know, we reach out and we speak to them. And there's quite a nice collegiality in the industry. Everybody is there to try and deliver the best possible experience for the guests, for the customers. So we're all working towards the same objective. And sometimes we just need to remind them of that. And if, for example, they're dropping the ball, we reassess our working relationship.
The camps that you have chosen to partner with for the long term, what makes them different?
So they're quite often not mass market, very small, very boutique, quite often owner run. So they're invested emotionally and financially. So it's in their best interests to deliver a really good experience. A lot of them are tried and tested. Well, I mean, most of them, in fact, I think we've been to 95% of them, many of them multiple times. We're out on the road 3-4 times a year going to these properties, making sure that they're what we say they are. They're boutique, they're small, and we have an established working relationship. So we're constantly able to check each other's temperature and make sure that everything is okay. And we know sometimes, you know, the owners maybe are going through a difficult time. There's been one of our partners, you know, again, an owner-run property. And unfortunately, you know, his wife had cancer. So we just sort of said, you know, we totally understand that your focus might not be completely on your business at the moment because you've got more important things, and we'll ease up. And, you know, we're not taking business away from you, but we're going to give you perhaps business that we know won't be high risk, that people are really easygoing, that they're there for a good time. We won't send any really difficult clients.
High maintenance.
Exactly. Yeah. Because we know you've got more important things to deal with. Yeah, working very closely.
Looking out for your suppliers a little bit,
looking
too.
Looking out for our suppliers. We understand that it's the partnership, and there are times where there's give and take. They make mistakes, so we say, you know what, we're not going to penalize you because we make mistakes too, and when we make a mistake, we'd like you to not penalize us. So really looking at it as a partnership.
You know, one of the challenges with delivering good experiences, I mean, at a camp level, you've got this big chasm between the customers who are usually pretty well off, and sometimes the teams that are working at the camp that are probably paid well above the market rate and treated really, really well, but live in a completely different context. The customers and the team serving the customers come from two different planets. Yeah. How do you see that some of your partners help teams bridge that divide between the customer and the team providing the service to the customer?
I think you're 100% right. It's so interesting. And I think a lot of the time properties often overstretch themselves trying to provide a certain experience. There's always an experience that comes to my mind. It was my personal experience. I was staying at a camp. There was a guy in the middle of Tanzania, the middle of nowhere. And Tanzania is a largely 30-40% Muslim population. And the guy was Abraham, a Muslim guy. And he was explaining the wines that were available for dinner. And he was trying to pronounce these quite difficult names, French vineyards, and then one in South Africa. And I mean, he was completely stuffing it up, which is totally fine because he's never learned to pronounce these words.
And probably doesn't drink wine.
And does not drink wine. I went up afterwards to the manager and I just said, it's really weird. Why have you got the Muslim guy who doesn't drink wine, who can't speak French, trying to pronounce a French word? Rather just say, guys, we have red wine and we have white wine. And for those guests at the camp who are interested, they'll look at the bottle. Sometimes, you know, the simple answer is the best answer. As you say, sometimes the gap between the people sitting at the table and the people serving at the table is so big, I don't think there's a need to widen it even further, and it can make both people really uncomfortable. So in that experience, the lady next to me was saying, it was sweet, but I felt so sorry for him, you know, because he was fumbling his words.
Yeah.
Now, she felt bad sitting at the table about to drink the wine because the organization of the dinner was such that the owner or the manager had said, you need to get up there and tell people about these wines. And he was fumbling. The guests were feeling uncomfortable. It wasn't a nice experience. Mm. Rather just say, I've put the red wine and the white wine on the table. If you don't like it, let me know. There's more in the bar and I'll bring you some alternatives.
So if you enable your team members to shine within the context that they're familiar with, you can help bridge that gap because they can be the experts serving the honored guests who are there visiting and approaching that not from a point of weakness and not understanding the experience that the guests want, but from a position of strength in welcome to my house.
Totally, very much. And I think one of the other things that when traveling, it's all about meeting people as well. You know, going to these beautiful places, these incredible properties, incredible scenery, but you're meeting these wonderful people. And I think when you try to standardize your staff too often, they lose their own personality. Mm. And that's something that a lot of these guys and girls up in Kenya and Tanzania, they have fantastic personalities. They have stories. And when you try and standardize them by training them all to this level and to this strict program, they lose a little bit of that because they think that's not what they want. Whereas the guests quite often just want to actually engage and learn more about you as the guide or learn more about you as the waiter. And they want to hear you make jokes and they want to hear where you're from. You need to try and remove the divide. And I think sometimes by overtraining, you actually increase the divide and you remove the authenticity of the experience. To me, there's a fine balance between providing sufficient training to deliver the experience, you know, and what is accepted from a Western experiential perspective versus overtraining, and you remove part of who they are.
So we started out this conversation talking about how digital disruptions has impacted the travel industry. But I'd also like to know from you how you see the sector is taking digital innovation on board. You know, we know that consumers are interfacing so much with their digital devices. They're becoming a larger and larger part of our everyday lives and our existence and how we interact with each other and organizations. So acknowledging that a part of Traffica's value add is offering an opportunity to escape it all, how are you providing a digitally integrated experience to customers? And I don't mean just while they're on Safari, but before and after.
It's something that we do look at and do consider and have made baby steps. We're in quite an interesting sort of position where a majority of our travelers are baby boomers. So they're in their 50s and 60s. Some of them are very tech-oriented and digitally driven. Others are not. And others still want to mail us their guest information form or fax. You know, we don't even have a fax. I don't remember when.
Who has a fax machine?
Who has a fax? A lot of our clients say, oh, can I fax you the information or do you want me to mail it? But that's okay. So we're in this sort of interesting divide whereby a large percentage of our current market is baby boomers, some of whom are on board with digital devices and some who simply aren't. Mm-hmm. But the future is definitely digital. So we've got, you know, all of our honeymooners that travel, and we do sort of quite a few honeymoons each year. They want apps. You know, how can we incorporate digital technology into our trips? You know, people wanting to bring drones and live stream their time on Safari. And there's so many things that people are asking that 10 years ago would simply not have been on the table. What we're doing is, you know, we've got quite a few systems and processes in place prior to travel. You know, all of our websites and our itineraries that we put together, they're all smartphone accessible and smartphone ready, but it's all, you know, scalable to different digital mm-hmm. devices. And then what we actually do is we use technology to help ourselves in our work as well. So we have campaigns that we sort of do these drip campaigns prior to travel, and we send out reminders and little pieces of information, little tidbits of exciting stuff to get people in the mood for their safari and excited about their trip. So that's sort of prior to travel. The real difficulty is during travel, because only some properties have Wi-Fi. And then some of the customers or the guests during their trip, they choose not to be connected
online,
per se.
Yeah.
So it's really hard. We haven't quite figured out the balance while they're on their trip to sort of integrate digital technology. We've got sort of some ideas about that. But if you're in the middle of the Serengeti, you don't have cell phone connection, let alone Wi-Fi. And then post-travel, we're also looking at ways in which we can sort of relive the moments and with campaigns, and obviously all of it's smartphone ready and the likes, but it's still something that is constantly evolving and we're trying to integrate into our business model.
When we talk about digital innovation, oftentimes people think about just the customer facing innovation, but oftentimes the innovation that can happen behind the scenes that makes certain processes easier for team members then unlocks time that you can spend on the phone or having a real human connection. And that innovation is sometimes just as impactful to the customer journey, even though the customer doesn't see it. And I know you've done quite a bit of stuff for pre-trip in terms of streamlining things so that your team can spend more time engaging.
Yeah, no, that's somewhere where we've probably done the most work and it's been very successful for us. We spent months researching different itinerary building software out there. And so much of it is tailored to cities and Europe and the US, and very little of it was tailored to travel in Africa. There are a few products out there, but they didn't suit us for a number of reasons. A tech team and built our own app to develop it. It's an in-house app. It's our itinerary building software. And that has literally saved us thousands of hours. You know, previously, our admin team would spend an hour and a half customizing and tailoring every single itinerary. So we send an itinerary when we quote, but also, you know, when we confirm trips. And then every time there's a change, you know, you have to go in and update the itinerary and make these changes and add this information in. And it was taking our team literally hours for every single itinerary. We then worked with this software development agency and custom built an app just for us, the way we want it to work. It works with our processor, it links with our other software. I think the record to build sort of an itinerary is like 13 minutes or something like that. We've gone from an hour and a half to 13 minutes. And it's still a fully tailored, 100% personalized itinerary. I always say...
But it's just the cutting and the pasting and putting it into a Word document or whatever that, that is out
gone.
The door. It's a plug and play.
It's plug
wonderful.
And play, exactly. And, you know, we carry over the personalization sort of thing, even to the itinerary. We have hundreds of images to choose from. So, for example, if our customer said, I love elephants, we're going to put an elephant on the front page of your itinerary, because right from the moment that you say, I like elephants, they're going to have an elephant right in front of them. And throughout their itinerary, they're going to have elephants because they love elephants. Or one thing that we're trying more and more to do is to create an opportunity for the customer to see themselves in the itinerary. Mm. So if we have like a young Caucasian couple going on their honeymoon, well, we use pictures of the young Caucasian couples. If we have older Asian clientele, you know, maybe in the 50s and 60s, we'll use imagery with older Asian clientele in the itinerary, just so they can say, well, this is my itinerary. This
doesn't feel foreign. It says, oh, this is something that looks like it could happen.
And there's elephants as well, because they love elephants.
Who doesn't love elephants?
Exactly.
Who doesn't love elephants? Troy, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. This has been a really interesting conversation. I've learned a ton about the luxury travel industry, the safari industry. So thank you.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to my interview with Troy Smith. I hope that our conversation has provided some insight and inspiration into how to deliver unique and compelling experiences. Whether your customers are high-end luxury safari goers or general consumers just trying to fulfill their day-to-day needs. For me, Troy highlighted the point that all customers want to feel cared for and looked after. His company listens to the needs of their customers and provides highly personalized experiences. They also keep a close eye on how these experiences are delivered and maintain a healthy ongoing rapport with their ecosystem of stakeholders and partners. Much of the rote work of the travel agent of yesteryear has moved into the online and self-service space. But Troy and his team have capitalized on the human aspect of customer service, leveraging technology as a supporting tool to enable this. These are learnings that we could apply to nearly any industry or customer segment. But speaking of travel, if my conversation with Troy has piqued your interest in going on safari yourself, Troy's contact details are available in the show notes for this episode. We talked a lot about the uber high end of his offering, but you don't need to be a millionaire to have a memorable safari experience. Troy also does customized trips that are within the reach of mere mortals. If you're enjoying the podcast, I invite you to share the program with others or head on over to iTunes to rate the program. This helps others find the show. I'll be back every Thursday this month with new CX Mini Masterclass episodes. These episodes are designed to be punchy, bite-sized overviews of key customer experience concepts and practical approaches that you can use. For the month of May, I'm focusing on how organizations can improve the way they understand the needs of their customers. So be sure to listen in or subscribe for updates when new shows go live. This episode was sponsored by CX University, a CX training company offering a broad array of customer experience learning options, including the convenience of learning anywhere and anytime with their online program, e-learning modules, and CCXP practice exams. CX University is an accredited resource and training provider, and they offer a flexible and affordable monthly subscription model. At the time of publishing this episode, course subscriptions start at just $75 per month and include access to CCXP practice exam questions. listeners of this podcast can get 10% off their first month subscription by entering the discount code PODCAST10 at checkout. If you're looking for help realizing customer-centric change in your organization, please don't hesitate to get in touch. My contact details are on my website, or you can reach me on LinkedIn and Twitter. My handle is @JuliaAllfelt.